Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Today we're going to be talking about horses, one of my favorite animals. And my guest today, Linda Anderson, is a woman, along with her husband, Alan. They have put together this fabulous publication called Horses with a Mission. Linda, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
You've been a guest before, and you and your husband, Alan, have founded a wonderful network. It's called Angel Animals, and you've done a number of books, and all of them have been of such a wonderful theme, showing how animals and people are very supportive of each other. But this is the first time that the two of you came out with one on horses. Now, you have a regular newsletter that you put out, and you get so much wonderful response from people. What made you decide, the two of you, that you wanted to focus on horses instead of dogs and cats?
Well, you know, part of it was curiosity on our part. We don't have a horse ourselves, although we both have ridden horses at various times in our lives. And since we do have dogs and cats, we kind of know a lot about them. We get a lot of stories from people about them. We have our own experiences. But horses really fascinate us. And so it was a lot of fun for us to be able to explore this world of horses and learn about them in ways that only we can learn about them, because we do these kind of stories, as you were talking about. Our books are always very unusual in that people will tell us things for the books that they have really never shared with anyone else, because they're of a more esoteric, maybe more of a spiritual nature. And so it was fun to explore that spiritual nature of horses.
Well, I like how you opened the book with information on history about horses. And they've been around for, you know, millions of years. And there is such a phenomenal impact that they have had, whether it has been cultivation of land. What the horse basically did was give freedom to people to go from one point to another. And they've always, just like you said in your book, they have always been seen as an expression of freedom. And whenever you see the image of a horse up on its hind legs, its mane blowing in the wind like the beautiful stallions in the wild, when you see that, that is always a demonstration of power in the minds of people. I mean, it's just magnificent to watch these animals when they're running and when they are doing that rearing up in that positioning that we all admire so much. But millions of years ago, and you went back 55 million years ago, and you said they were here in North America. Where did you get your resources of information regarding that far back?
Well, we did some research on the Internet and also just reading about horses and their history. And since we kind of go at it from the standpoint of we're more like maybe the mainstream public that knows a little bit about horses but not a lot. And so We thought that people would be kind of fascinated like we were by the fact that they were here 55 million years ago and in North America, and that they went extinct about 10,000 years ago, and then they were reintroduced to the Americans by the Spanish conquistadors. And then, of course, Native American Indians really took to horses, and they became, as you said, the symbol of freedom and this means of, basically, we say history was written on the back of a horse, because that's how people were able to settle the country, was on horses.
Yes, very true. In some parts of the world, you have animals like camels, but most of the time, people had to figure out ways of being able to, one, be mobile, and they might use various animals. Like in some parts of the world, the oxen were used, but the horse had speed. And, you know, in many parts of the world, they were prized more than gold because of the wonderful positioning of opportunity and freedom and power that was associated with the animal, depending on what part of history you look at. Now, you make a comment in your book, which is, I think, something that would surprise maybe many people, that there's more than 58 million horses worldwide. And that really seems like a huge number because we don't use them really for transportation anymore. We have got sophisticated levels of technology, automobiles, whatever you want to look at, planes. So we're not going to use the horse for transportation unless we are somewhere in the country where that is going to be done. But there are more people that own horses today that it surpasses what was even done in past history, all kinds of breeds.
It is pretty amazing. And what's interesting, too, is you mentioned that you know, we have a newsletter and we have a website and all that sort of thing. And we look at the demographics of people who come to our website, and right after the United States, as far as number of people who come to the website daily and weekly, is China. And China has a huge, isn't that interesting, has a huge history and current use of horses. You know, in many parts of China, that's really, the horses are a mode of transportation. So all over the world, the horses are still providing these kinds of services to people.
Look at the tomb that they uncovered. The name of it is escaping me right at the moment, where all the soldiers were found standing, all the horses, all of these various artifacts were demonstrated. It just boggled everybody's mind, and everything was carved so spectacularly, true to life. And you have them there. This was in the first emperor's tomb that they found. So you have this history that goes back. Now, you have some information. There's one, the International Museum of the Horse, which I was totally unfamiliar with. And I'll quote your book. You say, according to the American Horse Council, in 2001, there were approximately 6.1 million horses and 7.1 million people involved in the horse industry in the United States. And the same survey indicated the horse industry directly produces goods and services of $25.3 billion and has an impact of over $112 billion. You're hearing it correctly. This is with a big B on the U.S. gross domestic product. And the industry's contribution to the U.S. GDP is greater than the motion picture, railroad, furniture, and fixtures manufacturing industry. And this industry pays a total of $1.9 billion in taxes to federal, state, and local governments. Those are numbers that you just go, wow, who would have thought that there was that much business in horses?
I know, and it's every type of business. We have one of the biggest horse shows in the country here in Minnesota. And when they hold the Horse Expo each year, you know, they always talk about the number of people coming, and they have something like 55,000 attendees. And we're going, boy, that's a lot of people who are involved with horses.
Wow. Something else that you bring out in your book, right, in the first section, you talk about some wonderful, wonderful organizations, one of which I'm familiar with, and that's Linda Kohanov's Equine Facilitated Integrated Healing. Her particular facility, which is just wonderful. She's been a guest on my show, and I just have such an appreciation for what she does and training and working with people. And then you've got the Back in the Saddle Bit by Bit, BITS. It's out of Colorado, helping people with physical and mental challenges. They really want to assist military personnel that come back with maybe post-traumatic stress syndrome, helping them to readjust to life. Horses. The miniature horses are even taken into hospitals now to work with patients. And somebody would say, a miniature horse in a hospital? You've got to be kidding. But they're just as clean as any other animal that would be taken in, and they're just loved. So animals, horses are service animals, therapy animals. I just think it's absolutely fabulous what you've been able to present in your book here. Now, you have some interesting stories. Let's talk about Pegasus. He's the very first story in this book. How did you get acquainted with Vanessa Wright? She's in Nashua, New Hampshire. And why was Pegasus the first story you wanted in this book?
Two very good questions, Donna. Well, we met Vanessa through the contest before we had this book. Actually, before we do each of the books, we hold a contest, and we get word out as well as we can all over the place to ask people to submit stories that could then be considered for publication in the book. And Vanessa's story was one of the second prize winners of the contest. And we wanted to include this story at the very beginning because it portrayed what we learned about horses by writing this book, and that is how conscious they are in deciding what kind of service they want to give and in letting people know what they want and what they want mm-hmm. to do and what they're good at. And this story is one that just totally represents that. The horse completely makes his own conscious choice about how he wants to serve and the love that he wants to give and how he wants to do it. And so it was just perfect to start the book.
With Pegasus, it was really tough for him adjusting to an environment, and he became really like a guardian of other critters. And it just is an amazing story. Now let's move to Molly. Molly is a story, and maybe many of my listeners have heard about Molly. She was on national television. There was just all kinds of commentary about this phenomenal horse. Tell Molly's story.
Well, Molly, if your listeners think about it, they more than likely got an email at some point, because this went viral, where they saw this horse that had survived Hurricane Katrina and only had three legs. And so the story's title is Molly, the Three-Legged Pony Who Gave Hope to New Orleans. Now, Kay Harris is a person she's just a wonderful woman who rescues all types of animals, and she worked down in New Orleans. She lives in New Orleans, but then she worked after Hurricane Katrina and was, you know, one of the main leaders in rescuing something like 3,000 animals, if you can believe that. That's how dedicated she and her husband were to this rescue effort. And because Kay had ponies, and she had a business before Hurricane Katrina where they would take the ponies to children's birthday parties and, you know, all different kinds of ways that people like to have ponies show up and for people to interact with them, someone asked her, could you take a look at this horse, this pony, and see if you could take her in until we find out who her owner is and how to get her back to her people. And so Kay took Molly back to their ranch, and right before then they did find the owner, and the owner said, you know, we're in transit, we don't have a home anymore, and so we would be thrilled if you would go ahead and adopt Molly. And so they did. Well, they had also rescued a little dog, and the dog had, like, post-traumatic stress syndrome and just basically went kind of crazy and got loose and attacked Molly and bit her leg so badly that Molly couldn't even walk. The leg was just in terrible shape, a couple of legs, but one leg in particular. And so over the course of trying to heal Molly, Kay discovered that Molly had such a will to live. She was just so spunky. She was just determined. She was doing all kinds of things that were very clearly showing that she was going to be able to survive, even if she only had three legs. So Kay, being also very spunky herself, managed to talk the veterinarians at the Louisiana State University into removing Molly's leg, and she found somebody who could create a prosthetic device. He only had done them for humans before, but he agreed to create one for Molly. And so they had the surgery at the university, and Molly came through just with flying colors, and then they were able to put the prosthetic device on her and after a period of adjustment, and she had, I think she had several different tries, but what you saw in this photo that went viral was Molly with her prosthetic device, and she was the survivor. So a reporter from one of the news stations came out to look at Molly, and Kay said she calls it Molly magic, and Molly just charms people. And this reporter was so charmed by her, and he was so tired of having to report bad news down there, that it was just great that he could report that this horse, this pony, was determined to survive Katrina and to go on and live a good life. And so he wrote about her, and then it went everywhere from what he wrote, and then also from Louisiana State University, they put out a video about her, and that went all over the Internet. And so somebody wrote a children's book about Molly, and then there were several other things with CBS Evening News. Well, we heard about Molly, and we thought, you know, all these other people are writing about Molly, but we haven't heard from Kay. So we called Kay, and we said, would you like to tell the story in your own words with all the details that you want to tell? And she said, oh, I would love to, because Molly is doing so much good now. She goes to children's cancer camps and places where there are seniors and she people with disabilities, and she can always pick out exactly the people, whether they're the children or the adults, who need her the most, and she's just right there for them. She gives them exactly what they need. So Molly has become this wonderful healing agent, not just for New Orleans, but for everybody that she meets, and it's just the most inspiring story. And so anybody who's seen or heard this, they'll love reading this story from Kay, who knows Molly better than anybody.
Absolutely. In fact, a story that really brought tears to my eyes was about a little boy in a wheelchair, and he had some kind of a condition where his head would just shake violently back and forth, and he wanted to communicate so badly, and he couldn't. Yet when Molly was put next to him, his head stopped shaking, and he was forcibly keeping his head still so he could look at this pony that he just fell in love with. And he and Molly looked at each other. Molly knew that she didn't have to move. And then the therapist was asked, can I take this boy's hand? And the therapist was stunned. This child had not responded to anything before. And he was able to touch Molly's nose with his hand, and they were communicating telepathically. Mm-hmm. She knew exactly what was going on in his mind, and she just had such a phenomenal impact on this child.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a big wow for everybody there. Anyone that thinks that animals do not understand and they can't communicate, they've got to have an experience. Because once you have it, you never, ever forget it. You don't ever forget it. And you realize that they are intelligent. They are thinkers. They are aware. And I've known this about horses, and I can remember hearing people saying years ago, oh, horses are just, yeah, they don't have the brains. You know, they're just high, you know, if they're Arabians, gee whiz, they are just high strung, they don't think about things, they've got life too good, blah, blah, blah. They go on with all of this human thinking stuff without realizing that these animals are really intelligent creatures. They are very intelligent creatures. And that's one of the things that your book brings out. Now, one of the heartwarming stories that you have in here is about a horse named Peanut that nobody wanted. How did you find out about this wonderful old horse and Cookie McClung, who's in Elverson, Pennsylvania? Did she respond to the contest?
She was actually the grand prize winner of the contest.
Really?
Yes, yes. She writes for Phelps Sports, and they're one of the big sponsors of the U.S. Equestrian Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a wonderful person. She's rescued so many animals over the course of her life. But she wrote about Peanut, and Peanut was this pony that her children absolutely loved, and he played with them, and they, you know, they just grew up with this horse, but then they outgrew him, and he became pretty old, and she kind of likened Peanut to their great uncle Trevor, who, you know, in a large family, was, after he was aging, he kind of dressed sort of peculiar, and he didn't say or do the right things, and people were a little embarrassed by him. And so Peanut was kind of growing into that kind of a phase of his life where he would wander around, he would get out of his stall or whatever, out of the pasture, and the son would have to go find him because he'd wind up on the neighbor's porch and you know, all kinds of things like that. And the children, they were still too young to really understand, but they were going like, you know, he's getting really old and he's got so many medical problems and this and that and the other thing. And maybe it's time for him to go. But she kept thinking, no, I just, you know, it doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel right to the horse who's given so much love over the years, because he wasn't sick enough that he was suffering or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
He was just an old horse.
And so one day she saw this man coming by the pasture, and she looked out and she noticed that he handed something over the fence to Peanut, and she walked over to him, and he said that his name was Matthew, and that he had just moved in with his daughter, and he was aging, and he said he had given Peanut a carrot, and he said, do you mind if I visit with your pony? She said, he seems to like to listen to me. And so he started coming by, and he and Peanut would go for walks. And they would walk and talk and talk and talk. And every single morning, Peanut would be there waiting for the man. You could just tell that Peanut was so happy to have found a purpose in life again. This man really needed him. And no matter what, they always went for their walk. But finally one day, Matthew didn't show up, and she didn't know what was going to happen with Peanut. But then just a few days after Matthew stopped coming, Matthew had actually passed away, and Peanut just lay down on the warm summer grass and went to sleep. And that was the end of Peanut. Peanut and this fellow had bonded, and they left together.
Absolutely. It's just wonderful. Now, throughout your book, you have some wonderful quotes, and one of them by Burton Braley is, more than fame and more than money is the comment kind and sunny and the hearty warm approval of a friend, for it gives to life a savor and it makes you stronger, braver, and it gives you heart and spirit to the end. The horse is a wonderful, wonderful companion. Your book, you have so many, many stories. In fact, you even have something that relates to Black history and the horses by Miles Dean. And he's from Piscataway, New Jersey. And he co-founded a nonprofit organization called the Black Heritage Writers. He's their executive director. Tell us a little bit about that organization.
Well, I'm really glad you asked about that story. It's one of my very favorites in the book because it is truly a story of a man who had a mission in life and through every obstacle imaginable was determined to fulfill that mission, but he couldn't do it without the right horse. And so he had to meet the right horse to help him, and his mission was that he was a social studies teacher, middle grade schools, and he was very frustrated because the textbooks had very little, if anything, about the African Americans who had helped to settle and expand the country. It was just, you know, almost like an afterthought, hardly anything. And he wanted his students to know the contributions that African Americans had made to American history. And he was also really interested in horses. As you said, he founded the Black Heritage Writers, and so he thought, well, maybe I'll combine these two interests, and I'm going to plan a cross-country trip where I will ride a horse through and stop at 13 states along the way, and I will, from each state, then I will talk about what happened in that particular part of the country during the period when horses were the major means of transportation. And that will allow my students to hear all about African-American history from the standpoint of African-Americans for those states. So it took him 9 years to plan this trip.
Amazing.
Isn't that interesting? Plus, he had a brain tumor, he found out that he had, and he had to basically fight that back. And he continued, you know, planning, and he finally found this perfect horse. He named him Sankofa, which means in Ghanaian, return to get it. And Sankofa is a stallion, and he and Miles bonded, and they worked together, and they trained together, and they went to an animal communicator together, and they learned how to talk to each other and listen to each other, and they truly became a team. I mean, if you ever talk to Miles, that's one thing he stresses over and over again, is what a team they were. That he said it wasn't, you know, I was the man and he was the horse. It was a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And he fulfilled this mission. He started at the African Burial Grounds in Manhattan on Sankofa, and he traveled all the way across the country through 13 states. The New Jersey Star-Ledger put up podcasts on its website so Miles could call back from the road and tell about what was going on during in African American history in that state. He interviewed experts at black colleges in the various states with their information that they had about the contributions of African Americans. And he called back to his students every week, and they emailed him. And every week he would call back to the school, and they put him on the loudspeaker, and he'd tell about where he was and what they were doing. And he got all these wonderful receptions in various places where people came out to greet him in Sankofa. And he said Sankofa was very unstallion-like. I mean, he did not rear up or do anything odd. He was patient. He said one time there was something like 300 children rushing at him. If you can imagine rushing at a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And Sankofa just stood perfectly still, and he trusted Miles, and Miles trusted him, and there were treacherous places that they had to get through, and Sankofa always knew what they should do, and if he balked at doing it, Miles learned to listen to that and go a different direction. And it's just a wonderful story. They wound up at the California African American Museum in Los Angeles. They actually had to walk through Los Angeles traffic to get there.
Amazing.
And they poured libation at the end of the journey in tribute to the African American ancestors. And it was just a remarkable experience. And it did not get nearly as much attention as it deserved. And so we're just out there doing everything we can to let people know about this story, because the details of this story are so inspiring. And Miles's journey is, you know, it's not finished. He wants to change in education. He
mm-hmm.
wants to see these kids have the pride to know what their ancestors have accomplished.
Well, as you can tell, this book is loaded with stories, and I know we're running out of time here, but I want to give a quote. We've always known that animals make us feel good. Today, scientific proof is backing up living room logic to show that they are actually good for our health. That's by Marty Becker, DVM. I couldn't agree more. Linda, you and Alan have done something wonderful. This book is titled Horses with a Mission. The website on this particular book is horseswithamission.com. And, of course, you can go to their other website, angelanimals.net, to find out about the many other projects that Linda and Alan have been involved with and are continuing to grow with. Thank you so much, Linda, for being my guest today.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. More good things to share with you. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717,
TTAP.com. Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the toll-free worldwide number that you can call into, 888-815-9756. 888-815-9756, and we'll be able to chat. Of course, I always like to have your first name or your initial and know where you're calling from. And then after that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question when I'm finished about anything you like. It's that simple. So just pick up the phone and give me a call if you have something that's of concern to you, or maybe you've had a paranormal experience and you'd like some help with it. 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to let you know I received a call today, and I have been invited to be on the Super Psychic program that's on Achieve Radio, and I thought I'd give you the details. It's coming up this Saturday. I'm going to be doing a two-hour program with the host, Bill, and it's going to be, again, on AchieveRadio.com, and you can go if you wanted to hear it and you wanted to be able to find out exactly what you need to do. You go to AchieveRadio.com/super-psychic-radio. That's right. So AchieveRadio.com/super-psychic-radio. Then you'll be able to get the show. And the call-in numbers for the show are 602-402-412-4949, that's 602-412-4949, or 888-235-7374. Now, if you are calling from another country, some place outside of the United States, you can use Skype and use that 888-235-7374. So that's this coming Saturday, September the 19th. Then, on Saturday, September 26th, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Club Expo. This is a semi-annual event, and I absolutely enjoy being a part of this because it is such a relaxed environment, and all of the people there are just so friendly, and it's a wonderful environment. If you have questions about psychic ability, anything like that, this is being held in Kent, Washington. So I know there are many of you listening that are not in the state of Washington, but for those of you that are, the Expo is going to be from 9 in the morning until 5 in the evening on September the 26th. It's being held at Kent Commons, and that's at 525 4th Avenue North, and that's Kent, Washington, 98042. Now, for all of the details, if you need a map, anything like this, then go to their website, which is www.BLikeBoy, ELikeEdward, PLikePaul, CLikeCharlie, web.org. That's B-E-P-C, web.org, and you'll find out all of the information about the various vendors. I'm going to be speaking on Saturday. Also, I will have a booth there, and I'm going to be doing many readings for people. This is a fabulous event, and the whole family can come. There's all kinds of things that are going on, and it's just a wonderful way to spend the day. And if you have questions, if you're wanting to research something, you're going to have all kinds of people with various talents and experiences that you'll be able to interact with, and that's what makes this such a wonderful expo. So do plan that. Put it on your calendar if you are in the state of Washington, September the 26th, the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Club Expo on the Kent, or at the Kent Commons. And again, don't forget, I've got the special appearance on Achieve Radio, and it's the Super Psychic Show with Bill, and I'll be on for 2 hours from 4 until 6 this coming Saturday on the 19th. Okay, I wanted to share some information with you regarding solar energy. We are moving forward because of the inventiveness and curiosity and the driving need that we have to be able to utilize energy. Now, there's no one absolute way of doing anything, and so consequently, we're always going to be looking at innovative ways to make what we'd like to utilize, like solar power, more inexpensive so that just about anybody could have it. Think about computers when they first came out. Good gracious. I mean, we paid $5,000 in the 80s for our first computer, and it had the little itsy-bitsy screen. It was like a 5x7, at least it appeared to be that way. Just a tiny, tiny thing. And it hardly had any storage capacity on it at all, and we had to use floppy disks, and it was a nightmare. The internet just wasn't up and running very well, and I can remember the laborious process I would have to go through at that time. Well, today, look at where we are. You can get a computer that's got gigabytes of memory and RAM, and I mean, it's like $200-$300. You have Palm Pilots that can hold how much information today. Amazing. I was just talking with a friend who has gone wireless totally, and he has everything coming in on his portable laptop and also his BlackBerry. It's incredible what we're able to do today. Well, the same process is occurring with solar energy. Now, this is, back in the 80s, the solar panels, remember when they put them on the White House? Well, by golly, they tore them off. They didn't think it was worth it. Well, fortunately, the thinking processes of the people have changed somewhat, at least when it comes to solar energy today. They now are investigating what's called Suncatcher Solar Thermal System. Now, this was developed by a particular company, and it is amazing what they're able to do. They're now capturing solar energy at 31.25% efficiency. It's the highest that's ever been achieved by this kind of technology. Now, there are 38-foot-wide dishes. Those are pretty big. They're collecting enough heat energy to run a Stirling engine that can then generate 25 kilowatts of electric power. And this system that is recently designed will fulfill two of the world's largest solar contracts, providing a planned 1,600 megawatts to Southern California by 2014. It improved on the previous solar process that was used. Brand new design that makes each of these dishes, these 38-foot dishes, makes substantially lighter, and it's cheaper to manufacture. And that's what they have been wanting to evolve to. Now, there's a group of recent and current MIT engineering students that are wanting to bring solar thermal to Africa with an off-grid system that operates on a much smaller scale. Why? They don't have the economics to support anything different. So they've developed a micro generator capable of producing 3 kilowatts of electric power plus hundreds of gallons of hot water each day using relatively inexpensive, readily available components such as auto parts. That's what it takes. How can we do this so we can get the job done? How can we make it more economical? Leave it to young people to say, let me see what we can come up with. Now, engineering co-founder Arne Mueller says that the MIT group's nonprofit called STG International has already set up microgenerators at 2 locations in Lesotho. A third Lesotho installation is under construction at a medical clinic where it'll provide power for lighting and communications equipment as well as hot water. This is marvelous information. When we think of what we have had to do, a lot of people would like to have solar on their homes, you know, on the roofs of their homes, but the cost is just prohibitive. They're not going to be able to afford it. Well, if these MIT students have come up with this efficient system, why not incorporate it into a residential application that's going to be cost efficient, effective, and give us what we need? I know of just about, I don't know of any household that can't use plenty of hot water, especially if you have a number of members of family. Usually, by the time you get through that second shower, everybody's freezing to death after that. But you just need to realize that this is what happens. And it's exciting. It really is exciting. And that makes me want to make another comment. If you have children, if you know of young people that have a love of science, have a love of math, introduce them into subject matter like this. Take them into places where they can see scientists at work, or they can be in museums and look at how things have progressed. I think of the Kennedy Space Center. If you take a young person there and show them what we were doing back in the 60s and what science and space travel were able to do to enhance our everyday lives, it's amazing. And we take all of it for granted today. But there was a long learning curve and a lot of sacrifice that went on to make it available to us today. So here we are with solar. Who knows? Maybe within the next 5 years, we'll all be able to go out and have a solar unit on our house that is going to be efficient, effective, provide us with energy. So maybe we get paid, or at least not have energy bills that we're going to have to support, because we're able to catch the energy of the sun and make it work for us in a way that changes and empowers our lives on a physical level. That'd be just absolutely wonderful. This is Donna Sebo. Those telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. You like chocolate? I do. Well, I've got a recipe, a chocolate recipe that I'm going to be sharing with you. So get that pad of paper out and a pen, and I'm going to tell you about how you can make Italian chocolate truffles. They may not have ridges, but, oh, they are so melt-in-the-mouth good. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We've got a caller. We're going to be going to that caller. If you want to give me a buzz, go ahead and do so, and you'll be the next one in line. And don't forget that pad of paper and pen, because I'm going to have a recipe here that I think you'll just love. Easy to make, too. Hello, welcome to the show. First name or initials, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Pat in New Haven.
Hi, Pat. Welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Thank you.
Are temps getting a little bit cooler back where you are, or are you still nice and toasty?
Oh, they're getting cooler.
Mm-hmm. We've got trees changing out here in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
It's so pretty. I think we're going to have a bit of a winter this year, but
really?
They are just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Of course, we don't get the colors like you get back in Connecticut. I remember a trip when I was back there, and I was flying in, and it was fall, and there was this canopy of oranges, reds, and fading greens, and rich browns and golds. Oh, it was just incredible. And it just
it's amazing, and it's different every year, so that's really neat, too.
Oh, it's absolutely great. Okay, let's get down to business with you, Pat. First thing that I am looking at is being scattered. And I think that there's going to be a discipline that you're going to need to bring to your space where you say, wait a minute, I have had this patterning where I just try to be multitasker and be superwoman. This is ridiculous. I'm exhausted. I'm not getting done. What needs to be done? What is my priority schedule going to be? And I think if you can do that, it's going to serve you well. It brings to mind a story that a friend of mine who is one of these super efficient super women, she could get more things done than anybody I've ever known. But she reached a point she was so exhausted that she could hardly enjoy anything she was accomplishing. She was just absolutely burning out too quickly. And finally, someone said, well, if you've got your to-do list and you've got 500 items on that list, just focus on the top five. And she started doing that, and by golly, she got a lot more done. And she said if she couldn't get to everything on her list, she would just take the top five. And I'd say with you, take the top three.
Okay.
It's okay to have a to-do list, but let's limit it here because you are just stressing out. Trust me, the world is going to continue to spin. It doesn't give a hoot about your priority list. You're the one that has to keep your focus. And if you do that, you're going to get a lot more done, and you're going to feel a lot more comfortable about your life and getting things into positioning where you want them. So just prioritize. That's fine. Have your to-do list, but deal with the first three. Then go on down the list. If
okay.
you can't get to it all, the next days they're going to be there for you. Take it one day at a time, and
okay.
you'll really move ahead. What question do you have for me today, Pat?
In lieu of your program, do you pick up on communications from animals?
Sometimes. I know with my Scottish Terriers, there is a very clear communication that is done via body language, telepathic communication. Animals are just amazing. I have not trained as an animal communicator. I'm glad you brought that up. We are going to have an animal communicator on the show. Her name is Dawn Brunke, and let me check here when she is going to be on with me. I'm trying to see where I've got her. I thought she was this month, but I can't find her on my list. But she is just an absolutely wonderful. Wonderful woman.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, she's going to be on the 25th of this month.
Okay.
He's an animal communicator. But I've not focused on developing that. That is an arena I really would like to become more skilled in.
Do you want to try with my hound today?
Sure. What did you want to ask about your hound?
Well, I'm concerned about his hips and spine, and he's between 9 and 11, and I'm trying to figure out what he needs.
Well, actually, I'll tell you something. I'm not so concerned about his hips and his spine as I am about his eyes. What's his name, by the way?
His name is Bo.
Okay. With Bo, I'm looking at what I would say would be his left eye, and it's left. It would be your right, but his left. And I think once in a while he's bumping into things. And it has to do with the vision in one of his eyes that is diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly don't know if it's the beginning of a cataract or if it is glaucoma. I do not know what's going on here. But if you notice him bumping into things, I would encourage you to consider talking to someone that works with animals and doing some exercises that help him maintain his balance and be thoughtful about moving things in the house, because he is going to identify with certain items. He doesn't like change a heck of a lot when it comes to that. And as he gets older, he's going to live for a few more years. But with his hips, I think, believe it or not, if you could find someone that was a real good masseuse chiropractor for animals, it would be one of the best things that you could do for him. But he does need to have some kind of exercise that, just gentle walking would be the best. He loves to run, but that's not happening so much with him now. But he's actually doing quite well.
He walks at a pace faster than my walking, so I bought a little boy's bike a couple of weeks ago, and I've started taking him on walks. Is that good for him?
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. This is marvelous. Now, believe it or not, he's not as fast as he was. But this is something that's very important for him. And if you have nutritional supplements that you can give him in a liquid form where you just pop it in his mouth, then that's a good thing. Because once in a while he gets finicky about his food. He'll check it out. If it doesn't smell just right, he'll sit down and look at you and say, okay, what are you trying to give me this time?
Right.
So,
So
you need to have a vitamin or nutritional supplementation that you just say, okay, this is time. Pop it in with an eyedropper or something like that. He's all taken care of, and he looks at you saying, oh, boy, what'd you do that to me for?
Great.
But you just talk to him, and he'll understand. He's a wonderful companion. He's just great, and he's got a sense of humor, too.
He's phenomenal. Do you recommend looking for herbs or something for his eyes?
No. I would recommend that you would talk to the vet first and find out exactly what's going on. But keep an eye on him. And if you notice him bumping into things, see how he's leaning. Watch how he's moving his body. And what he's trying to do is adjust. His peripheral vision is being affected on one side. Not on both sides, but on one side.
Okay, the vet did say a few visits ago the beginning of cataracts.
All right, there you go. So there may be a surgery that can be done for him. And the vet will tell you, and that would be wonderful for him, because they can fix the eyes just like they can with people. Pat, I hate to tell you, dear, but we're out of time.
Oh,
you are more than
much.
Welcome.
Bless you.
You're more
Bye-bye.
Than welcome. This
Bye-bye.
Is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And don't forget, those wonderful, wonderful critters that we call friends, whether it's a horse, dog, cat, fish, doesn't make any difference, bird, they have a very special place in this experience of life, and they are here to let us know about some of the things that they can teach us if we're just open and receptive to it. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about raising Brandon, creating a path for an adult that has autism. Wonderful, wonderful story. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.